Hi, my name is Mark. I love y'all too, and good morning to everyone. I have to read this speaker statement. It says the NA member chosen to speak at a meeting. Can everybody hear me? Okay. An NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is a possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our act of addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope. It is extremely cold out here. I don't think that anybody is going to deny that. And I just want to tell you all that I am extremely nervous to be up here. And, yeah, I love you all too. And I just want to, if you don't mind me, I like to read this part out of the basic text. I'm going to find my eyeballs. This helps me. The ways in which we carry the message are as varied as our members. This is in the It Works How and Why, page 119, step 12. There are, however, some basic guidelines that we as a fellowship have found to be helpful. First and foremost, we share our experience, strength, and hope. This means that we share our experience, not the theories we have heard from other stories. This also means that we share our own experience, not someone else's. It's not our job to tell someone seeking recovery where to work, who to live with, how to raise their children, or anything else outside the realm of our experience with recovery. Someone we are trying to help may have problems in these areas. We can help by not managing that person's life, but by sharing our own experience in those areas. Developing a personal style for carrying the message rests on a simple requirement. We must be ourselves. We each have a special, one-of-a-kind personality that is sure to be an attraction to many. Some of us have a sparkling personal sense of humor, which may breed someone in despair. Some of us are especially warm and compassionate, able to reach an addict who has rarely been the recipient of kindness, and some of us have a remarkable talent for telling the truth. In no uncertain terms, to an addict literally dying to hear it. Some of us are a valuable asset of any service committee, while others do better working one-on-one with a sovereign addict. Whatever our own personality makeup, we can be assured that when we sincerely try to carry the message, we can reach the addict seeking recovery. And I'm an addict. My name is Martin. I'm not really one of these people that'll go quoting the book from you because it's like I read that I'm here to really just share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And I also want to thank this committee for taking a risk and asking me to come in here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you. I just kind of want to begin with my childhood. And the reason why I wanted to start with my childhood is because after working the steps a couple times in Narcotics Anonymous. What I realize is that whatever happened in the very beginning is a direct result of how I am today. And the reason why that I act and do the things that I do sometimes. I grew up in a Catholic family. I grew up with 11 brothers and sisters. We were a big family, but not a very tight family. When growing up, there were instances where we would all have to get together in a group and say our prayers. We would all get together and say the rosary. And if we didn't do that, we would get punished. We would get spanked, you know. My mother and father, they were real religious people. They really come up with a Catholic faith. And I didn't really understand it at the time, you know, why I was forced to do all this. You know what I mean? I mean, we would all... They would wake us up and we'd be tired and stuff. You know what I mean? I could remember sometimes falling asleep and getting smacked for doing that. You know what I mean? So I didn't have a real good model of how to believe in a God. You know what I mean? I really want to thank all the people that have. I really want to thank you all for showing up here tonight, today. This morning to help freeze with me, but you know, the first thing I did this morning was I walked out, I looked out here, I thought, wow, no one's going to be here, so that's going to be cool. But you know, coming in here and meeting some people and having some friends and some support group, there was people that were here today to pray with me, because I've never done that with people before. I've never done that. It's not me. But it meant the world to me to know that that God is going to be here with me no matter what happens. See, because my reason for being here is to help that addict that's still suffering. That whatever trials and tribulations I had to go through to be standing on this morning, it'll be all worth it if it helps one person. Not all of you, but it just if it helps one. So growing up, I remember there was some memories that I had that because we really weren't a close family. I mean, not then, but I remember knives being thrown at my sister. She's running. I can remember standing in the hallway, and my sister's running down the hall, and she slams the door closed, and I see this knife go, and it sticks into the door. We're just a crazy bunch of kids. We're just a crazy bunch of kids, I guess. There's a time in my life that I was sexually abused by my brother. I was around 8 or 9 years old. I still don't remember exact time of year or that time of my life, but it was just a very traumatic and esteem-lowering situation, you know? I really, at that time, I really wanted my brother dead, you know? Don't get me wrong, I am not here to put blame on my mother and my father, because I love my mother and father. They're still alive, and I love them. They did the best that they knew how with what they knew at the time. I'm not blaming them. I felt alone. I felt like I was an outsider looking in, you know. I never felt like I amounted to anything, you know. When I went to school, I always was joked at or looked at funny because, you know, one, my last name, and one, because I looked different, I'm not white. I'm brown. In case y'all ain't noticed. I have slanted eyes. It's because I'm part Oriental. A lot of people mistake me for Mexican or Hawaiian, and I'm actually from the island of Guam. My father was actually from the island of Guam. That is an American territory for all of you that don't know. But I really grew up with a really low self-esteem about myself. And when I found, I was thinking last night, you know, I was telling a friend that before I went to bed, I was thinking about all these situations that were happening in my life, and I thought about when was the first time that I ever used, and not knowing that I was using, but the first time, see, I grew up Catholic, so I was an altar boy, and the first thing that, you go up there, taste the wine, you know what I mean? I thought that, not when it's blessed and all that shit, you just grab the bottle and we just grabbed the bottle and just started hitting it, you know, all the altar boys, we'd all just be hitting it, you know what I mean? So I was getting my first taste of what it was like to use. But the real day that, that my addiction started to take off, I grew up in a neighborhood where we all hung around on the corner and drink beer and stuff like that, and the potheads, they would go somewhere else, you know what I mean? But the one day that I got high. The first time I smoked dope, I didn't even get high, you know? I probably got ripped off. I was probably one of those, you know, oh, we got a sucker here, boy. Give him some bad dope, think he's buying some good dope. And I actually didn't get high. And I remember being with my brother with the dope heads and sitting in this man's living room, and they started to pass this joint around, and that was the first time that I ever felt like I was somebody. You know, it took all the insecurities, it took all the self-doubt and everything else, it took it right out of my life. I remember it was kind of like an out-of-body experience, you know what I mean? You're sitting there getting high, and then all of a sudden you're looking at yourself and you're saying, like, God dang, this ain't all that bad. That was when my addiction started to take off, you know? It's like it says in the basic text, at first it was fun. And it was fun. It was fun. But at the end, towards the end of my using, there was nothing fun about it. You know. I just wasn't one of those addicts that kept getting put in jail or, kept getting arrested or anything like that. I wasn't like that. I didn't get arrested. I spent the most time I ever spent in jail was 4 hours. You know, and that was by mistake. They picked me. They thought I was, you know, there was this guy, he robbed somebody, and I looked just like him, you know. So y'all, you know, we all do look alike sometimes. And they picked me up. The detective walks up to me. He says, "Do you know why you're here?" I said, "No." He says, "You've been charged with armed robbery." And I looked at him. I was like, No, you got the wrong guy. This guy looked like Sherlock Holmes, I'll never forget him. He looked just like Sherlock Holmes. And I thought, yeah, you got this shit all wrong. And so he says, I guess I better go get my story straight. And I said, yeah, I think you better, you know. But it was just situations like that, even at that time, I just didn't think I had a problem with drugs, you know what I mean? I always thought of myself as a functioning individual. You know, I always had a job. I'm not gonna sit up here and lie to you and tell you I always paid my bills. But I always had a job. I had a car. It wasn't always a great car, but it was a car. It got me around, you know. You know, I've been walking around this convention, and you know, I just know that this is a God thing for me. But I know I'm just gonna get off track because this is what I do. I'll get off track and then I'll probably go back somewhere else. But you know, I've been walking around this convention because I've been working the steps with my sponsor, and it works how and why. And I'm actually going into my fifth and sixth and seventh step. Probably some people say, well, you did a fifth. Well, and it works out why there are some questions that you have to answer in the fifth step. So once you do a fourth, you will do a fifth. But anyway, there's... I think God's kind of just putting people in my mind because there's, you know, I've created a lot of harm when I was out there using, and I created a lot of harm with a lot of women. And there's been people walking around this convention that I think these are these people I should be making amends to, you know? It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird. But anyway, I feel like the destruction that I created in my using, by the time I got finished with my using, it was, I came into a meeting on April the 19th, 1990. I sat down in a meeting. There was this guy, he was celebrating his first year. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that there was somebody that has actually stayed clean for 1 year. I thought they were all lying, you know. They were all happy and they were all just, you know, just real excited about this guy celebrating this 1 year. And I thought to myself, my egotistical self said, shit, if he can do it, I know I can do it. Little did I know that there is some hard work put in to stay clean. It takes a lot of hard work and perseverance to stay clean for 1 year. And I walked into this meeting and I sat down and I remember seeing the literature table. And I, you know, because again, you know, being raised a Catholic, you would see all that literature strewn on the rack up there. And I thought you had to buy it. I thought you had to pay money to, because I looked at this little box, you know, that you put the money in. And I didn't, because you see, that's what I used to do when I was a kid too, as a Catholic. I'd steal that money, you know. When I walked up and looked at the table and I didn't see any place to put any money in there, I didn't understand that it was free, you know. And I wanted so bad to go pick it up. So the girl that I was with actually picked up a stack for me and gave it to me. See, I didn't come into Narcotics Anonymous through a treatment center. I didn't come in here like that. I came in here with a drug problem that I didn't have any hope of getting out of. And when I walked into that one meeting and I sat down and I heard him read Who Was an Addict, and I, because you see, there's some things that I'll remember, that I remember about my first meeting, and that was one of them, was when they started reading Who Was an Addict. And I thought to myself, who have told him that shit about me, you know? Who told him that I lived to use and used to live? How could they know that that's how I live? The second thing that I remember is how it works. It says, if you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort, then you're ready to take certain steps. And these are the principles that'll make your recovery possible. And when I started to read the steps, you know, you hear all these suggestions: get a sponsor, work the steps, do 90 meetings, 90 days. Don't go around your old friends. So I got the basic text. I actually got the basic text. I was at a meeting. This guy handed me he loaned me his basic text. And it better be God, man. I got the basic text, and I started to read it. And I read the first step, and it says, "We're powerless over our addiction, that our lives are becoming manageable." I said, "I ain't got a problem with that." Second step, say it came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore the sanity. I didn't have a problem with that. And so we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. I didn't have a problem with that either. Then it said we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And I started to write all this shit down. And I thought to myself, man, I better get me a sponsor. This is a little bit more than I thought it was going to be. And so I did. I got a sponsor. And my first sponsor, I like to say, guided me into Narcotics Anonymous. His name was Donnie G. He's a black guy. And I say that because I can remember riding down the street with him on 64, and I remember this feeling came over me. I said, look, if I don't tell him the truth, I'm not going to get anywhere with him, you know? And I said to my sponsor, I said, Donnie, I said, man, I got to tell you something. You know, I'm 30 days clean. He's like, what, do you use or something like that? I said, no, man. I said, man, I don't like black people. And he says, what's wrong with that? I don't like white people. So I knew I was in the right place, and I knew I had picked the right sponsor, you know what I mean? Because it was such a relief. I had to tell him the truth. And he did. He guided me through the steps the first time. And I'm truly grateful to him. Donnie left Narcotics Anonymous. He left. 7 years later, after working steps with him, he left. A situation happened in his life. His baby died, and he felt like he couldn't relate to people in Narcotics Anonymous, so he left. So my sponsor, sponsee, he kept telling me, he says, look, your sponsor's not coming back. It is your responsibility. Your recovery is your responsibility. You need to find another sponsor. And I immediately looked at him. I said, man, would you mind being my sponsor? And he says, yeah. 7 years later, he left because of a situation that happened in his life. I'm not saying that to say that everybody will leave in your life, but some do. These guys were great sponsors. I won't say nothing bad about them, but stop leaving me here. You know? My sponsor that I have today. Because sponsorship is real important to me. It's the heartbeat of this fellowship. And my sponsor, the reason why I chose him is because over the 15 years that I've been here, I've seen him go through so much pain and so many different situations in his life, death, and he's never left. He has yet to leave. And he was actually the first guy I ever wanted to ask to be my sponsor. Some of us takes a long time to get it, you know what I mean? But it took me 14 years to ask him to be my sponsor. And I'm truly grateful to this man. I'm truly grateful to him. He has guided me through the steps once again. And I just say, you know, I just want to say that the importance of a sponsorship. If I didn't have a sponsor, I wouldn't be able to come up here and stand in front of you. You know what I mean? My sponsor in the very beginning, my sponsor says your recovery is like building a house. You see, you know, we all talk about this is the last house on the block. And actually, I think we've all built a lot of houses in one big neighborhood. You know what I mean? We've all tore the ones down that weren't any good, the ones that we didn't want to keep, you know, the doors that we just really dreaded walking in and knocking on. So I had to tear the house that I built up prior to Narcotics Anonymous and come in here and build a new house. And when I started to build the foundation was in the first, my first three steps, was working the first three steps, admitting that I had a problem, that that my life had become unmanageable, admitting that there is a God and that it wasn't me, and be willing to search out the God of my understanding, you know, to start trying to do His will instead of continuing to do my will, which was a tough thing to do, you know, because I grew up doing things my way. That's what got me here to Narcotics Anonymous, was doing things my way. There was a guy that used to come in our meetings too. He used to sing, you know, that old Frank Sinatra song, "I Did It My Way." I can relate. I did everything my way. My way didn't work. When I got to Narcotics Anonymous, it stopped working. My first sponsor, he stepped me straight pretty quickly. He set me straight pretty quickly. He says, "What could you tell me about recovery?" So that was the day. There was nothing I could answer. I couldn't even answer the question. I said that that was the day that I shut my mouth and began to listen. You know, there's a lot of messages that I hear and that I've heard in Narcotics Anonymous. A lot of one-liners and things like that. But again, starting to build this house that I felt like I wanted to live in. When I started to tell you about my life, you know, and my fourth step, being sexually abused as a child, that was one of the worst experiences in my life, you know, being sexually abused as a child. But, you know, that wasn't just all the bad that happened to me. You know, there was some good that happened in my life. But in writing a four step and writing a four step and being able to sit down with another individual and another man and talk to him and look at him and tell him about my life story, that was the neat thing I found about doing a fourth and fifth step, was that I was able to relive my life all over again and not have to use over it. So if there's people here that are worried or scared about doing a four step, there's no need to be. God's here. God is there. You know, God was in my life way long before I got to Narcotics Anonymous, way long before I got here. So when I started to reveal the truth about myself, I started to see some things wrong with me, you know, some character defects, some shortcomings. And I didn't, you know, when I got Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't even know those words existed, you know, that I had shortcomings or character defects like that, like ego and lust and self-pride and stuff like that, you know what I mean? I didn't have a clue until I got to Narcotics Anonymous that those words even existed, you know? And when I started to look at the character defects and shortcomings in my life, I started to realize that there was more to this than just the use of drugs. There was a behavior that I have been practicing for a long time, and that I needed to coming to Narcotics Anonymous and being asked to come up here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you. As scary as it feels, as scared and nervous as I have been, I'm still willing to do it. I'm still willing to come up here and try to carry a message from Narcotics Anonymous to you. My sponsor today, like I said, we are working through the 12 steps again with him, and it works on why. And I just wanted to share, a little experience with you all that I had when I was just, because I just finished my fifth step with him. When you work it, and when you work the steps, I think out of it works on why, you start to see a lot of patterns, because it doesn't talk about drugs, it talks about our using, it talks about patterns in our life, and that's kind of why I wanted to start when I was a child, because you know those patterns carried into my adulthood. You know, my low self-esteem, like I'm not worthy to stand up here. Really, I am. I think I am. I think I'm qualified. I think I qualify to stand up here, just like any one of you can. You know what I mean? We're all qualified to stand up here. You know, for some reason, God chose this program committee to ask me. Out of all the people that were here, I was just amazed that of all the people that they could have asked, they asked me. I don't know why. There was a moment in my fourth step where the sexual abuse was like it was yesterday. And I remember I couldn't breathe, like now. I couldn't breathe, and I said to myself, I said, Martin, you gotta breathe. You gotta breathe. And it was a good thing. Don't let my tears confuse you. It was a good thing. Because it was the first time in my life that I was able to say, this isn't me anymore. You know, I don't have to carry this with me anymore. And I looked at my sponsor, and he just had a real compassionate and a real supportive look on his face, because all I've ever really wanted out of life for somebody to hear me. We just celebrated my father's 85th birthday. And my brother, the one that I was talking about, was there. And I could truly walk up to him, tell him that I love him. that's a direct result of coming to Narcotics Anonymous. Having a God of my understanding. To give me the courage. Thanks, bro. To give me the courage to walk through that. I think when I start saying I'm probably going to be closing this pretty much. Well, see, y'all ain't laughing at me. I know y'all can identify with this. Like, I know. I'm not going to really stand up here and keep y'all out here freezing to death. But I do want to thank you for your support and for your love and for your prayers, for your willingness to sit here with me and in the cold and to watch a beautiful sunrise that the God of my understanding has given us, you know? I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love Narcotics Anonymous. It saved my life. It just literally saved my life. It has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. Beyond my wildest dreams. It has given me a life that is worth living. I am so grateful to the people in Narcotics Anonymous to have led me to my God. I am so grateful for that. A God that I can feel in my heart. And I can see in the people around me. Again, I really want to thank Narcotics Anonymous and you and all the people that said the prayers with me this morning. It just really meant the world to me that you would be there for me.